Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It's time for the hard-hitting analysis you won't find anywhere else.
Here's former Super Bowl winning scout Brian Broaddus
and Bobby Belt.
10-5 victory! Cowboys win!
This is Love of the Star.
Welcome to the Love of the Star podcast. I am Bobby Belt, Dallas Cowboys insider for 105.3 The Fan of Dallas, your radio flagship home of the Dallas Cowboys. Joined, as always, by Brian Broaddus, former Super Bowl-winning NFL scout. He is now co-host of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan of Dallas, Monday through Friday, 2 to 7 p.m. Central. You can check that out on the Odyssey app. And you can also hear Brian on the pre- and post-game show for the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, which is where he is at tonight. He is still at the stadium. I left, so I'm back home now, and we're getting ready to set up. But we're recording this on Sunday night after what can only be described as a glorious night for Cowboys fans. The Cowboys get the victory, 20-17. And before we dive into anything else specifically about the game, I want to spike the football a little bit, Brian. I feel like I gave good confidence to Brett Maher, and he's proved me right now with 350-yard field goals and the game winner. Brett Maher, I think we should feel good about that man.
You know what? You should absolutely feel good about Brett Maher. And you know what? Bones Fossil and the coaching staff and the scouting staff, you know, that was a very, very difficult time, Bobby, when we were all doing that in Oxnard, when we were watching – you know, with Garibay, even post-draft, when they signed Garibay from Texas Tech, we were all like, oh, well, hey, this guy, he's better than Dicker the Kicker at Texas, and he's better than this guy and that guy. And, you know, and I just was kind of – I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well, they went out and they evaluated this guy, and everybody that covered Big 12 football was like, no, this guy can really, really kick. So there was a lot of things, a lot of good feeling going forward about the Cowboys kicking situation, you know, and then with Haralahu as well, in that competition. And I give them credit. I give them absolute credit, because they could have just let this thing go, okay, we're going to hire Haralahu's the kicker and we're not going to worry about it, or we're going to make Garibay work. No, they said, hey, we honestly have to evaluate this position.
Yep.
And we have to go get a guy that we think has a big leg that can make field goals. And it looks like, you know, to this point, through 2 weeks of the season, they've selected the right guy.
Yes, they did. You know, who says you can't go home, you know? Brett Maher working out so far. Cowboys win this one over the Bengals 20-17, a game I thought they'd lose, honestly, by like three touchdowns. The defense... Man, we're going to get into specifics next segment about the offense a little bit later. We'll get into the defense, but just kind of a general overview about this team and how this game played out, Brian. I think some of the big headlines for me are you did what you needed to do in terms of you pressured Joe Burrow. He could not breathe all night. I felt like there was some exhaustion set in the second half a little bit for the pass rush. They were out there a lot. Cincinnati controlled the ball for 35 minutes. I felt like they were getting a little exhausted near the end. They weren't generating the same pressure they were in the first half. But good job generating pressure. Good job protecting Cooper Rush on the other side. They allowed just one sack in the game. And I think overall, Tyler Smith did well. Thought it was a good bounce back week for Terrence Steele. And, you know, one of the things we talked about was Cincinnati knew you were going to want to run the football, so you needed to make them pay. And I think early on, that's what they did. They made them pay in some of those favorable looks. And as the game went on, Cincinnati had to you know, play that a little bit. They had to start taking things away and softening up some of the run looks. But overall, a really gutsy victory for the entire team.
No, absolutely. I think everything you nailed on, Bobby, is absolutely right. The moment of the game for me happened in the very first series, the very first offensive series for the Cowboys, in Mike McCarthy with his quarterback, his offense, deciding to go for a 4th-and-2 on his own 44-yard line. I mean, there was no hesitation. And I remember sitting in the press box going, is he going to try and draw him off sides? What's he doing here? Is he going to try and make him burn a timeout? And what happened was, it was interesting because if you watch, and I remember this very vividly, when they stayed on the field, like it's the Cincinnati's punt return unit was on, and then they had to run off, and defense had to run back on.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, McCarthy's being cute. He's going to try and make him burn a timeout here, or he's going to try and catch him with 12 men on the field and pick it up that way. But no. He runs a play. They call it. They block it up. Noah Brown runs an in-cut there, 17-yard pass. Great throw, great catch, great protection. And now they're cooking. And all of a sudden, the confidence meter for his offense went from, like, low level to, like, boom. Like, he just – I mean, he hit it on 100. If that's what you know, if I'm doing that the right way for the crusty guy.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, that thing hit 100. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is how we're going to play football today. So Mike McCarthy, tip of the cap to you. I'm super critical of you a lot of the time, but you did the right thing. You knew what your team needed and you got the result you needed for it. So congratulations on that.
Am I over thinking it, Brian? Am I reading too much into it? When one of the themes we heard in the Cowboys locker room this week was, it's just week one. Like, there's 16 weeks left, yada, yada, yada.
Stephen Jones told us to relax.
Yeah, he gave you the old Aaron Rodgers. Relax. Yeah. But doesn't it say that 4th-and-2 opening drive on your own side of the field, they knew how important it was that they need to right this ship early. I don't think you're making that. I don't think you're making that call if you think everything's all right as rain and we'll just kick it and we trust our defense. That felt like they understand there needed to be a statement made here, and I'm glad they made it. But I think that betrays some of their rhetoric about how they've talked about where their team is at. I think they knew they needed that, and you mentioned it was the kick in the pants they needed. That, you know, you had the incompletion to CeeDee Lamb on third down, which was disappointing, but then you hit Noah Brown for 17 on fourth down. Then it's Dalton Schultz for 9, Zeke for 7 and a first down, Tony Pollard for 5 yards, CeeDee Lamb on the end around for 6, Kevontae Turpin for 3, and then it's the touchdown pass to Noah Brown, who made a fantastic catch in the end zone. Noah Brown was fantastic tonight. We'll talk about that a little bit more specifically in the next segment, but it was when they got out there and they scored, there's something about the way this team is and the way this defense is that just getting the opening touchdown seems to do so much for your confidence in this team to win a football game. If you're able to score on that first drive, I know my confidence in their ability to compete and win this game went way up when they just scored one touchdown out of the gate. It's like, that's enough of a head start for this defense right now that I think you can feel confident that you're in a good spot for the next few drives.
No, you're right about that. I mean, it clearly, you rattled off the plays after that. And it was like offensive rhythm. And it's offensive rhythm that carried over the next time they got the football, you know? And I think it really, really helped the defense as well. Knowing that they go out there opening drive against Joe Burrow, they've got a 7-0 lead.
Yeah.
You know, I think that really, really, it energized the fan base after it was shock and then it was awe and then it was here we go. And I just felt like, I'm like, McCarthy is not dicking around today.
No.
He is going to find a way to win this game. He's going against one of the best young quarterbacks in the league, one of the best young wide receivers, or tandem of wide receivers, or, I mean,
trio.
That group that they have over there.
Yeah.
You couldn't play conservatively in this game and win today. Now, they tried in the second half. They had that first, second, third series of the second half,
yeah,
where all of a sudden it was a little bit of, oh, I don't know here, Jim. I don't know. I was doing my Tony Romo. Oh, I don't know, Jim. But that's, you know, that's where I think that, you know, if they were able to rally a little bit after that 19-play drive, man, I'm sitting there thinking, I wasn't thinking good thoughts. I'm not going to lie to you. I am not thinking good thoughts at all. But for them to get that stop, that final stop, after, you know, Brian Anger's punt, I thought it was beautifully placed. Then you get a special teams return coming back the other way. So things kind of got back on track for this team after a really, really difficult second half.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they did try to play it a little bit more conservatively. Joe Mixon, 5 carries, 5 yards in the first half.
Yeah, it was 3 yards a carry.
Really,
Joe Mixon averaged 3 yards a carry.
Run defense was great.
Was outstanding.
But they did start to chip away a little bit in that second half. Joe Mixon touches the ball 15 times in the second half. He was getting a big workload, and you saw it was starting to wear things down, and they were converting those third downs. They had that one drive where they converted 3 third-down opportunities. That was the one where they scored the touchdown and then get the 2-point conversion to tie it up. And I don't know about you, Brian, but when they scored and got that 2-point conversion, I felt like, here we go again. A team decides, let's punch these Cowboys in the mouth, and they're not going to be able to respond. And I felt like after that touchdown and that 2-point conversion, I was like, this is the Bengals game. The Bengals are winning this game. And Dallas showed a resilience in a game that, honestly, I don't know that we've seen in 3 years of Mike McCarthy being here. The Mike McCarthy era, if we're just being totally blunt, has had two, and then week one has had a track record of soft football teams. They're not tough, really. They're not physical. This was one of the more physical games I think they've won in the last several years.
Although this was old school in the way that they were able to pull it off. And I still say that Mixon, yeah, he chipping away. But, man, it looks so much cleaner playing run defense tonight than it did
Absolutely.
Last week. When linebackers blocked, edge is blocked, end is blocked. I mean, everybody's blocked. I mean, it seemed like there were more white shirts, and they tried to run the counters with a get blockers out in space. Van Der Esch stretching the thing, knocking them out. Wilson knocking things down. You know, Armstrong, guys getting in position. Last week, this week they get in position to make the plays. Last week it wasn't so good.
Yeah.
Last week it wasn't so good. So, yeah, I just think that, yeah, you're right about the toughness aspect. But I'm going to give these guys some credit for playing some damn good run defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think that overall, you got to come out happy with the performance. And like I said, it's funny to me. When Dallas came out in this game in the first half, you could tell there was a commitment to let's get the run established early on. And I just felt like we saw that from Cincinnati right out of the gate. It's Mixon for 10, Mixon for 6. There's a screen pass to Mixon. The very next drive where they get the ball, it's Mixon for 5, Mixon for 5, Mixon for 4, Mixon for 2. They clearly wanted to try and wear them down. They felt like, we don't care if we're getting 2 to 3 yards a carry. We just think that if we physically wear you down, you guys have a history of crumbling. And that's what I think is nice, is that
they
show resilience. No.
This team, they had to try and run the ball, because every time they went back to pass,
right,
the quarterback was wearing somebody with a white jersey.
Yeah.
They had to try and do something, because other than that one 19 play drive, really, what did they do all night?
Yeah.
Really, I mean, nothing.
No, they chipped away. And honestly, they were the benefactor of some, you know, tough moments. Like, you get the scramble from Burrow, and then the call on Donovan Wilson for the, you know, unnecessary roughness. And, yeah. And you know, they benefited from a couple different areas. This game could have been put out of reach if Dalton Schultz doesn't fumble.
No question.
Closing in on the red zone, trying to make something happen. I'll ask this. Maybe it's not a big deal. Do you think Dalton Schultz, like, he's got the first down. Should he have just been happy with the profit? Or, like, do you think that little tap dancing he was doing was a little much?
How many times have we seen Dalton Schultz, like, run, bounce off somebody else, get spun around, get hit in the back, fumble the ball? You know, I mean, he's trying. I mean, he's honestly trying to make and get more yards. But in that situation, sure. Take the ball, get the first down, and get down. You know, if just live to fight another day. But, you know, he's trying to make a play. He gets walloped a lot, you know, and when you watch him play. So, that's kind of nitpicky on us to say that. But I'm like, you get that, you kick that field goal or you drive that thing in and get a touchdown. This thing is church.
It's over at that point. You are listening to the Love of the Star podcast. The Love of the Star is an Odyssey podcast. You can find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, before Brian and I talk to you about this offense, you know, it was a great game. We were all excited on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and there's only one way to celebrate, and that's by going to Boomer Jacks. You can cool off with cool drink specials and affordable eats. I know I was burning up at the stadium yesterday, partly because I was wearing a hoodie. That probably wasn't the best choice in 90-degree weather. But, man, it was all I could do to stop thinking about Boomer Jacks and the cold drinks there. It's a great space with something for the whole family or your group of friends. Whatever type of atmosphere you're looking for, Boomer Jacks provides that. And you can come in, you can cool off with drink specials starting at $3. They've got awesome food, awesome appetizers. There's wall-to-wall TVs, live music, and more. Everybody's going to be happy. Whether you're looking for a great, you know, happy hour with your coworkers, a good spot to watch some of the games with your buddies, or you're just looking for a nice family night out, Boomer Jacks is the spot. It fits anything that you need. 17 DFW locations, so you know there's one around you, and you can find your location by going to boomerjacks.com. That's boomerjacks.com. All right, Brian, let's talk about specifics now. I mean, we kind of did an overview of the game itself and some of the key moments, but let's look at specifics relating to offense and defense. Let's do this segment. We'll start off with the offense first. We did not talk nearly enough about him in some of the key moments of the game, but what a performance from Cooper Rush, especially early. I think in the second half, Cincinnati adjusted. They took away some stuff from him, but ultimately, you know, makes them pay early, makes Cincinnati have to respect the passing game, and then also on that final drive when they get into field goal position, you know, made the plays when he needed to. So Cooper Rush, this is 2 years in a row now that he's really stepped up in a big way for them.
Yeah, how about that? Cooper Rush, 2-0 as an NFL starter, both of them comeback victories. That's incredible. And, you know, it's so funny in the post game, they're talking to him and Clarence Hill's like, are you happy? Are you, because he's so,
I'm happy.
Focused on just finding, you know, it's just like, you know, we made some good plays. I was really happy about the way, you know, Noah did a great job of, you know, and he's just kind of monotone talking about it and everybody's kind of laughing.
Yep.
You know, and you're thinking, man, you need to be excited about this, but that's Cooper Rush. And I think a lot of it has to do with today and going into this game, his coaches and teammates had confidence in him.
In a big way.
The rest of us didn't.
Yeah.
The rest of us are like, and you know, hey, let's be honest. You know, you get in a situation where your backup quarterback, and I know Babe Loflenberg doesn't like me to say the backup quarterback, but the quarterback that doesn't normally start is, you know, is playing today. And so you're trying to think, and after how poorly they looked last week on offense with Dak Prescott in the game with receivers and running and all, you know, the line and all the questions that you had. Well, here you go. This, you know, like you're expecting him to come in here and do great things. He played as well as you can imagine. You know, he gave them, he was one of the main reasons why they won this football game, because he didn't make mistakes. He didn't turn over the ball. He didn't try and do too much. He managed everything successfully. When they had a chance to make big plays, he delivered on some big plays. You know, that final drive, they needed, you know, they needed 20 yards. What did he do? He found a way. They burned a timeout along the way. And all of a sudden, you know, the ball's to the sidelines. They got to rally, spike it. There's all kinds of disastrous things that could have happened in the last, you know, 25 seconds of that game. But he was able to kind of pull it all together, get him in field goal range. The great thing about it was, if it's a miss, it's overtime. If it's a make, we're all going home happy. And he got just enough to get Brett Maher to get that thing home. And I thought he played a super ball game tonight.
Boy, and just as much as we opened the show up with confidence in Brett Maher, just hooked that inside. I honestly thought watching it live, where I was watching the in-house feed, I thought he missed it. I thought it hooked. But just right, and you saw everybody else reacting positively, so I felt good about it. A lot of positive things to say about Cooper Rush. I don't think you can say enough good things about Noah Brown. Holy cow, 5 catches, 91 yards, and a touchdown. And let's just look, Brian, over the course of the game, some of these catches that he had. You're talking about 4th and 2 for 17 yards. Big conversion there. The 2nd and 7 from the Cincinnati 9, he scores that 9-yard touchdown pass. A fantastic reception. 3rd and 10, 28-yard pickup, keeps the drive alive. 3rd and 4, 25-yard pickup, keeps the drive alive. Another, you've got him on the final drive there, that one with 51 seconds left.
The tip ball.
Yeah, 12-yard reception. Yeah. Every single play Noah Brown made today was huge. It wasn't just 5 for 91. It was 5 catches that I don't know if you win the game without any one of them.
Yeah, 5 for 5 on huge plays. That's what you want to say right there. 5 targets, 5 catches. All 5 of them were huge, huge plays for Noah Brown. And you know, this is one of those things, Bobby, when we were at Oxnard and we were watching Noah Brown and Simi Fehoko and guys like that, you know, they were having positive practices.
Yeah.
They were having, you know, good. It wasn't just like they were super consistent. It wasn't up and down and up and down. And, you know, it's like one day they're really good, 2 days they're bad, one day they're good again. No, Noah Brown did a great job of being super consistent tonight. And like I was talking about in the post-game show, you know, Noah Brown, not only does he go 5 for 5 on big catches, Noah Brown's your personal protector on the punt team. You know, Noah Brown is doing other things to help you win football games. So, you know, I'm glad for him. I hope this is something that he can build on. I'm hoping that next week, if they get Michael Gallup back, it's Lamb, it's Brown, it's Gallup, those guys all making plays. That's what my hope is for next week.
I this will stun you. I know we're just 2 games into the season, and so you're projecting out a lot. It's like, you know, trying to project out Micah Parsons for, you know, 34 sacks this year, because he has 2 in each game. But through 2 games, Noah Brown's 17-game projection, Brian, is 85 receptions and 1,350 yards. Not bad. A guy, maybe he's your Cedric Wilson. Maybe he's this guy that steps up and has a career. And he said at his locker, I want to point it out real quick. He said at his locker, talked about, I've been in Dallas for a long time and waited my turn, and talked about how this organization has shown a lot of belief in me, and I wanted to pay that back and pay that back in this opportunity. And he absolutely has in a big way. How much Cooper Rush getting here in 2017? He obviously missed a year, but that's the same year Noah Brown got here. How much do you think just their time, probably taking reps together on the same offense just over the course of 5 years, is why it seems like Cooper Rush had a lot of trust and a lot of faith in Noah Brown?
How many scout team reps you think those two took together?
A lot.
Running other teams' routes and, here, man, throw me the back shoulder fade down here to emulate Terry McLaurin. Or here, throw this, you know, over here for, you know, yeah, it's Cooper Rush. Every rep he takes in practice is not a rep getting ready for the offense. This week he got the most work he's ever going to get getting ready for a game. I'm sure the Minnesota game last year, same thing.
Well, Minnesota,
he's
even
not
remember
a lot of work.
Even Minnesota,
and neither's Noah Brown.
Yeah, even Minnesota,
you know?
They didn't rule out Dak until game time, so he wasn't getting all the work. This was the first time where it's like you're the guy, and really stood out, played well. What did you think about how CeeDee Lamb played tonight? 7 catches, 75 yards. I thought he finished the game a lot stronger. The first half was a little shaky, but I thought he finished the game really well.
There is there's a lot going on in CeeDee Lamb, and he is, he's now got the target on him. He's the guy that's now the number one wide receiver. He's going to draw coverage. He's going to draw attention. I felt like they tried to get him going early with some of the screens and some of the passes that they threw to him, but I'm okay. Again, CeeDee Lamb, 11 targets, same number of targets as last week. Instead of getting 2 catches, he got 7 catches.
Yeah.
That's
and a big catch play.
Yeah.
Big
if CeeDee Lamb's going to get 11 targets, give me 7, 8, or 9 catches, please. Just give me 7, 8, or 9 off 11 targets, and I'll be super happy with how they're using CeeDee Lamb.
By the way, I want to point out that on the last Love of the Star podcast, when we went to the listener mailbag, you remember one of our listeners set the over-under for receptions for CeeDee at 7. And so nailed that one. Our listeners are good. They should be working
for
Vegas.
They're very good. Very good.
So that's the takeaway on CeeDee Lamb. I did think it was interesting when he had that one catch and he kind of got rolled up, and his knee or his ankle was clearly bothering him. Hanson Yang, the assistant athletic trainer, he was over there taping him up on the sideline right after that. Looked in a lot of pain. Tyler Biotis started calling the trainers over after he got up, and he pushed Tyler Biotis' hand down, gave a thumbs up, and started waving them off, get the hell off of the field. I did like seeing CeeDee Lamb clearly is exhibiting toughness and wants to make sure he's out there for his team.
He's wide receiver one. He's got to go out there and play. The whole thing with Houston and guys like that, we're going to get to a point in time where we'll see. Maybe Tolbert can step up in one of these practices. Maybe all of a sudden it's Tolbert's involved, and then you've got him going the right direction, and he's part of the five that's getting work along with Turpin and those guys. And, but they need more guys like the Noah Browns that they're stepping up, and the CeeDee Lamb said, see, he's wide receiver one. He has to step up. The others, the Noah Browns, the Turpins, guys like that, they're going to need those guys to play well.
Offensive line. I know offensive line's always one that you get a better look at when you get a chance to watch the film.
Tomorrow morning, Monday morning.
That's somewhere where our opinions will probably evolve more than any other position on offense when you watch it back, is looking at how they played. But just kind of your initial takeaways from the offensive line, what you saw from up in the press box. Like I said, I thought Tyler Smith played great. I thought Terrence Steele had a really nice bounce back week. Matt Farniak, I thought, held his own okay. There were a couple times where he got beat. I thought the guy who
Hendrickson got him that one time,
he
right?
Did,
Didn't
he
Hendrickson
did.
go at three technique and got him on a move.
So
yeah.
He got him once and Cooper Rush
was
like
that
got
a
blasted.
Twist or was that Hendrickson at three?
That was Hendrickson at three on okay. one where he didn't get a sack, but he rocked Cooper Rush and Cooper Rush had to throw it away quick. The only sack they got tonight came on a twist with Hubbard. Hubbard came on a twist and Biotish was late getting over there to pick it up. So the only guy I thought struggled tonight, and it wasn't even consistent. I thought there were a couple times where I noticed Tyler Biotish doing good things, but the guy I noticed the most having struggles tonight was Tyler Biotish. I don't know how you saw it.
Yeah, I that's the great thing about getting to watch the film in the morning and kind of take care of that. But I thought overall, man, I'm always worried about Cooper Rush holding the ball because there were times in the preseason where, you know, hold and hold and hold and, you know, I thought he was very decisive throwing the ball, but I think he understood that, you know, in the games and the practices and the stuff he got during training camp, he has to be quicker. Somebody was telling him, hey, Cooper, you have to throw the ball quicker. This is, you can't hold it. And I thought he did a really nice job of that, but I thought the line did a nice job of giving him the opportunity to see where he needed to throw the ball and gives the receivers the opportunity to get the route, you know, get into the route tree and then make that throw where he needs to be. So I'm sure there's, you know, when you're grading 70, 75 plays or whatever it's going to be, I'm sure there's going to be those ones where you're like, oh, that was a minus. Oh, that was bad. Oh, they got lucky there. But I think for the most part, for the Bengals not to only have one sack and it not come from Hendrickson, I think it would have to be a win. It's like Ja'Marr Chase catching five balls for 50 yards.
Yeah.
That's a win on defense. Hendrickson not having a sack, that's a win for the Cowboy offensive line.
Absolutely. And one more thing I want to point out, since we're talking about the offensive line, before we transition over to defense, and I know we talked about the turnover Dalton Schultz had, and Dalton Schultz has had a little bit of a slow start to the season as a pass catcher. I'm gonna say it with my chest, Brian. I don't believe after two games, I don't believe Dalton Schultz is a liability blocking right now. Schultz has looked
so
really
either.
Good. Schultz had a nice block on the Pollard.
Ferguson, I think on the long run, I have to watch it, but Ferguson got into like a scuffle, and it might have been after the long run.
It was the touchdown,
I think. Pass,
yeah,
whatever they called it.
It was a pass, but it was a run in spirit.
Okay. Anyway, the 1 yard run, Ferguson came off the ball and like punished his guy and got in kind of a scuffling thing where the officials had to jump in, and he goes to the sidelines and like Mike McCarthy's like grabbing him like, bro, take it easy out there. You know,
he plays with some aggression.
Because I was watching him. I mean, he had a really, really good block. But you're right about these tight ends. Schultz and Ferguson, I think they're doing a lot better job with the run blocking stuff, at least through the first 2 weeks of the season.
You're listening to the Love of the Star podcast. The Love of the Star is an Odyssey podcast. You can find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Were you stressing in the final 2 minutes of that game on Sunday? I think everybody was. you know, caused all of our blood pressure to rise a little bit. You need a stress-free night out this week, and you can get that by going to Boomer Jacks. Get your blood pressure back to normal a little bit, you know? Enjoy a stress-free night out with wallet-friendly drinks and eats. The spot is Boomer Jacks. There's live music, all the games you could want to watch, and more. There's something for the whole gang, whether it's you and your buddies wanting to go out and get some drinks in the evening, or if it's, you know, a happy hour with coworkers, or, you know, maybe you just want to go by yourself. You're just wanting to go hang out, find somewhere, watch a game in some solitude, have a couple drinks. You can find that at Boomer Jacks. It's also a great spot for the family. Me and my family love to go there, get the appetizers, get the food, get the drinks. It's a wonderful spot. You deserve to be happy, and Boomer Jacks can provide you that happiness. Wall-to-wall TVs, live music, and more. Everybody will be happy when they're at Boomer Jacks. There's 17 DFW locations, so there's one near you. Wherever you're at in the Metroplex, there is a Boomer Jacks near you. You can find yours at BoomerJacks.com. That's BoomerJacks.com. All right, Brian, that kind of gives us a good overview of what the offense did. I think what's more impressive, obviously, is what this defense did. We're talking about 2 weeks in a row allowing fewer than 20 points, 2 weeks in a row where you give up just a single touchdown to two pretty explosive offenses with really good weapons there. Your biggest takeaway, some of your overarching thoughts from the defensive performance tonight?
Man, you're right. What? Last week it was 211 yards or something like that for Tom Brady throwing the ball.
Yep.
Joe Burrow had 199 in this game. Yep. And he was running for his life in this. And
He had 199 with the sacks. Their net passing yards were 165.
There you go. Oof. That's what I mean, I thought they did a great job of getting after Joe Burrow. They did not. They're Cowboy teams in the past, and I remember being in a game here in AT&T where the New York Giants, every one of their offensive linemen were gone. They were all playing with like backup offensive linemen, the whole line. And you're thinking, oh, okay, these guys are going to take advantage. They're going to get up the field. They're going to be sack fest. Eli Manning, and then Giants win the game.
Yep.
They block your front. You get no stats, no nothing. This group knew that Joe Burrow, as great as he is, his kryptonite right now is his offensive line. His offensive line is a problem. But what's so funny is, and not if you're a Bengals fan, this could have been the second week in a row that they'd have won a game with, you know, if you think about if they kicked the extra point,
yeah.
And, you know, they're going to give up seven sacks and win this game. Or this game, they're going to give up all these sacks and win this game. They could be 2-0, and Joe Burrow just taking a beating. And I don't know if at the end of it, if Joe Burrow is going to be standing at the. I mean, he took a ton of hits today, and it affected him to the point where the ball was coming out, and it wasn't like Joe was flinching or anything like that because Joe will hang in there.
Yeah,
but you could tell he was throwing and somebody was near him or on him, or Micah Parsons. Like, I remember one time, ball is going to go to the outside to Chase on a third down. They blitz Micah Parsons off the edge in Burrow's face. Collins blocks down, much like we saw last week where Dak got sacked. But Collins blocks down, free run on Joe Burrow. He's throwing the ball to the outside.
Destroyed him.
And like, but he's kind of cringing as he's throwing the ball. You know, he's kind of crumpled up.
Yeah, he didn't get to step through it.
He thinks he's going to get hit. And Parsons hits him, but kind of holds him up. And, you know, not to get the roughing call and all that. Doesn't spike him in the ground. But that ball went out so quick, and it wasn't even close to being accurate. So, yeah, I mean, that was – that right there, I mean, was that tells you a lot about what happened, you know, in this game as far as what the pressure was able to do.
I think that when you look at the defense, just a couple guys for me that I think really stood out, maybe didn't get some of the same. I don't know. It's hard to. We're following along in the game. I don't know how much social media was talking about these guys, but it didn't feel like there was a lot of chatter about these guys. First off, I thought Anthony Brown was great tonight. There were several times where I saw him locked up on T. Higgins or other guys. Made a great play in space tackling T. Higgins on a third down. That stood out to me. Anthony Barr was really good tonight, I thought. He was flashing a lot, made a lot of plays. I thought Dante Fowler had a nice showing when he was given opportunities. And then for me, there was one play where Donovan Wilson missed Joe Mixon in the hole, where what should have been third and seven ended up being a first down because Mixon just kind of jumped over him. I don't know if you remember that play. He's like diving at his ankles. He got straight through the hole, should have been a loss, and Mixon goes over him. And that was the only time where I was like, that's where you miss J'Ron Curse. J'Ron Curse isn't missing that tackle. But other than that, Donovan Wilson was really, really good tonight, I thought.
Yeah, he was. And when you start to talk about, man, they've got so many of these guys that are having to play in crucial roles.
Yep.
Whether it's Tyler Smith, whether it's Cooper Rush, I mean, Noah Brown, you know, Wilson. I mean, the one thing you know about Wilson is he will blow you up, and he's around the ball. You know,
he likes
Van Der Esch. Yeah, I mean, they are going to be around the ball, and I thought Wilson played really well. I tell you what, I thought Anthony Barr, because Anthony Barr I didn't think was any good at all last week.
No,
but he stepped up, looked like he played with better recognition, and looked like he played with better quickness. He didn't get hooked up on blocks like he did against the Buccaneers last Sunday night. He got off blocks, made some plays. Really, really good job on his part.
Really unfortunate the play where Drew Sample, the tight end, got hurt. But that play by Anthony Barr, recognizing that it was a screen, remaining patient, didn't take the bait, didn't, you know, get upfield and run by it, was right there to just blow that play up. I thought there were a couple moments like that. He did get hit with the unnecessary roughness call. I don't know about you, Brian. I don't know what he's supposed to do there. He's got his momentum. He's going down to the ground as Burrow is tripping up and going to the ground. I don't know how he's supposed to pull up and not hit him.
Yeah, that's the difficult thing with these. The problem you really, really run into is these quarterbacks take off running. And then what happens is, you know, the referees are now behind, 10 yards behind the play and trailing. And they're running behind, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to kind of navigate. And then they see the hit and they immediately think, oh, that's roughing. That's unnecessary. You know, that's a unnecessary roughness penalty. You know, but they're, you know, Brad Allen is like 12 yards behind the play, and he's trying to run to protect the quarterback. You know, and they got it now where these other officials can make the calls. But I will credit them for this, though. Yeah, you had the roughing on the quarterbacks, but I do applaud the officials for picking up the flag on the ball that went down the middle of the field that could have been, whether you want to call unnecessary roughness again or targeting or whatever you wanted to call, where Leighton Van Der Esch, they were able to jar the ball loose. That to me was like, I'm thinking, man, that is a football play.
Yeah.
That's just a football play. So, but Brad Allen's crew, they picked up that flag, said no penalty there. So I thought that, you know, they're going to protect these quarterbacks. They are not going to let them. When these guys give themselves up and they see they're going down and you hit them, they're going to throw that flag.
One of the plays that I thought was interesting stood out to me. Third quarter, 4:54 remaining. Cowboys get that big stop on third and four. I don't know if you remember this. This is the one where Leighton Van Der Esch gets the sack, where Burrow kind of came up into the pocket. And while that goes on the stat sheet as that's a sack for Leighton Van Der Esch on third and four, I think the assist goes to Micah Parsons. That's that one where he spun inside on Lyle Collins, and Joe Burrow had to break almost immediately. He had to, you know, just bail on the pocket immediately and went right up into Leighton Van Der Esch. The stat line says two sacks for Micah Parsons, five quarterback hits. Man, tonight was one of those nights where I felt like he could easily pick up five sacks. And even though he had two on the ledger, I don't think that does justice to how much he just wrecked this game.
He knew. The thing I think that really helped him in this game is, and it's getting easier for him to, like, know who he's playing against. So now, you know, like, he knew who Lyle Collins was as a blocker. You know, when he was rushing, or he knew that Jonah Williams gets beat to the inside, he knew that, or he could move around. See, that's the thing I think that makes Micah Parsons so great is the fact that he just doesn't play in one spot. You can move him all over that defense, and he can find whoever the weakest guy is. And the fact that he knew Lyle Collins and had worked against Lyle Collins and had worked with Lyle Collins a bunch, I think that really, really helped him with his pass rush. And you're right. He wrecked shop every – there were a couple of times where the ball went wide where Burrow tried to, and threw it, and I thought he was going to – like two times he went up, and I thought, oh, he's going to tip one of these balls and catch it and then go in for a score. But, man, he just they have totally figured out that he is one of the best weapons in the National Football League. And Dan Quinn is – you give them a lot of credit because – you watch that Penn State tape, Bobby. Like, if you tell me that he was going to be this special pass rusher that he is, I owe you a steak dinner if you're going to tell me that one.
How many, and this is just a hypothetical question for you, but if you're starting a team right now and you're picking your first defender, how many guys are you taking over Parsons?
Well, they always say – man, if he was just an off-ball linebacker, you wouldn't take him, would you?
No, probably not.
He does everything now.
Run fits, pass discussion. Coverage.
Listen, I'm going to be real honest, okay?
Yeah.
What I saw at Penn State, I believe on my top 50, I think I had him at 12 of my top 50.
Yeah,
which is where he went. I had others ahead of him. I had 11 other guys ahead of him, you know. And so I'm thinking about Micah Parsons being a linebacker. Micah Parsons, Penn State linebacker, 12th best player on my board. You know, but I'm also thinking about Slater, the tackle from Northwestern, and I'm also thinking about Bolton, the linebacker from Missouri.
Yep.
I'm thinking about these other guys, and I got into discussion on Twitter during the game. I sometimes get, you know me, I get roped in. You thought, you know, Slater? You know, I'm like, yeah, I love Micah Parsons. I did. I had him as my 12th best player. You know, should he have probably been the first one? Sure. Now, if you know what you're knowing now, you redraft, he's probably the first. He's probably taken number one, you know? I mean, I think there was a quarterback that was taken. But still, you know, you get my point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I was thinking about helping this offense with Slater at tackle. Play him at guard, play him at tackle, you know, and then boom, you're ready to go. Well, it appears you've got that kind of taken care of now with Smith. I know we're two games in, but, you know, Slater, it's very much like the Tyron Smith, J.J. Watt thing to me.
Yeah.
You know, either one of them you take and you go, that's it. But I'm not shying away from, you know, I'm not going to say, Parsons, Bill, you know, this offensive line has had some issues, and Slater would have addressed and helped those offensive line issues. But Micah Parsons is one of the top five players in the National Football League, you know, and maybe one day Slater will be one of the top tackles in this league. But, you know, if you're going to say, oh, well, hell, Broadus, you're wrong. You should have taken Micah Parsons. Show me all those times where Micah Parsons rushed the passer as like an end or as, you know, playing that scheme. If you show me that in Penn State tape, you're a lot better scout than me. A lot better scout.
Oh, well, Will McClay told us during training camp, he's like, did we think he had some pass rush ability? Yeah. Did we know he could be that as a pass?
That's all Dan Quinn.
No, yeah,
that's
And Will said we had no idea it was like that.
Yeah, it's very similar to the time when I asked Charlie Army, who was his real name. He was a GM with the Rams. And I said, hey, did you vote Rodney Harrison a playoff share that year you went to the Super Bowl? And he said, why would we vote Rodney Harrison a playoff share? I said, because if he doesn't dive into the back of Trent Green's legs and blow him up, you would have never known how good Kurt Warner was.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes, you know, sometimes you have that ability, like, you know, whether it's Aiden Dirty or somebody had a vision, you know, George Edwards, somebody had a vision to say, maybe this guy could run. If Tank Lawrence doesn't hurt his foot in practice in week two
and Randy gets COVID.
Yeah. Do you even think about putting Micah Parsons as a pass rusher?
No.
Hell no, you don't. You're just playing him, you know? Maybe you figure it out, but not to the level we've seen right now.
Last question here for you, because you know, I think we referenced him a little bit at the beginning, but overall, I thought, given the expectations and the chatter this week about Ja'Marr Chase versus Trayvon Diggs, I thought Trayvon Diggs was fantastic tonight.
Yeah, it was. And, man, it's not easy dealing with Chase. I mean, that's Alabama and LSU going at it right there. Those are two, you know, two very competitive guys when it, you know, the routes and the coverage and stuff like that. I thought it was hilarious when we were interviewing Micah post-game, and he's like, whoa, that's seven. That seven made the tackle over there. He was surprised,
yeah.
You know. But good for Diggs. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that when you talk about cornerbacks and how they play in the league, it's not always about covering, though. It's not always about knocking the ball down or getting a big interception to seal the game. That's the kind of things they talk about. You know, that's the thing. That's the nuts and bolts of, hey, you want me to show you a game-saving play? Boom, right there. Micah Parsons, Diggs, who, you know, for a time there really doesn't want to be involved,
no.
Doesn't really want to do it. But you know what? He stepped up in a big way and got his team, his defense off the field and helped his team win a football game.
That does it for us here at the Love of the Star. Brian Broaddus will have an early Monday morning. When you're listening to this podcast, Brian is probably watching tape. It'll be.
I promise you, I am.
You've got a matchup against the 2-0 Giants next Monday on Monday Night Football. That should be an intriguing matchup. We'll bring you all the previews from that. But we'll talk to you guys again here on Wednesday.